You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Everybody, welcome to episode number 85 of Well Met. We are a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. I am John Horstman from Denver, Colorado. Today is November 13th, 2016, and with me, of course, is the crew. First, let's go to lovely Saskatoon, Canada, with our very own Kevin Obdestead. Hey, Kev.
Hey, John. It feels good to be back. What a crazy couple of weeks. BlizzCon, the Hearthstone World Championship, the new set reveal. I was on at the TESPA Collegiate Series. I hope a few people got to tune in for that. And now just, you know, settling back into regular old-fashioned life. I turned off my vacation email auto-response tonight, and that was the hardest thing I've had to do all day.
Well, I'm glad you're taking it easy, at least. You know, just, you know, get that email stuff out of the way and let it come to you. But let's go to Kansas City here for a second and say hi to Mr. Eldorian himself, J.R. Cook. Hey, J.R.
Hey, everybody. The last week was so like awesome, but also I am so glad to be back here in the comfort of my own home and recording with you guys, because even though BlizzCon is pretty awesome, I got to meet all you people again. Man, it's just, I'm getting old, man. It was a little too much, but so worth it.
So worth it indeed. Oh man, I didn't fix any of that at all. I'm a struggle bus today. You know what sucks? Skype sucks.
Skype does suck.
I love OBS Studio, but some of the stuff that we do for our video is just, apparently it's too complex. That's what we'll go for. It's too complex and sophisticated. But more than likely, you know, there's just some bugs here and there. Whatever. Oh, boys, it's good to be back. 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks. We got to hang out a little bit at BlizzCon,
doesn't feel like 2 weeks, but...
Feels like a month to me. It feels way longer. I don't know why. It feels like it's been like a month. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just crazy. Maybe it's because I slept the last week and I felt like I slept
right
a decade. Yeah, you're coming out
of that. That's probably the biggest reason is actually getting sleep, because last week there was none.
Yeah, that's true. We didn't sleep much at all. Well, let's talk about some BlizzCon stories and what we've been up to this week. Before we go into it, Well Met and BlizzPro both had some interviews with Hearthstone devs. So we were with Mike Donay and Yang Wu for one, and then Rochelle Davis and Peter Whalen for another. They're on YouTube now, and I'm working on working with BlizzPro guys to get to the audio so that we can post the audios on the feed as well. It might be at the end of this episode. It might just be a totally separate thing. We'll see. We'll see what I feel like doing. So that'll be there. That was a lot of fun, though. It was weird. Kevin and I did one, and then JR and I did another. But that was a lot of fun, right? Like, that was pretty cool, getting to hang out with some of the Hearthstone peeps.
I have to say, like, the main reason I love, like, interviewing them is you see the passion, and you hear the passion behind them and what they're putting into the game. And, it's one of those experiences that, you know, from the outside, you don't really see or notice until you really get to talk to them. Even at BlizzCon as a regular attendee or anything like that, getting a chance to sit down and talk to any of the developers, everybody there was just so interested in listening to what you had to say. Me and a couple of friends were even sitting upstairs by the Hearthstone Tavern area, and someone from Blizzard came up to us and started asking us questions and was wanting to know if he can spend like 20 minutes or so of our time to just kind of survey our BlizzCon experiences and things like that. And, you know, he didn't know anything about us or anything like that. So just those kind of experiences at BlizzCon were just really awesome. Like, Blizzard has taken BlizzCon to like a whole new level on experiencing the actual show. I feel it's a lot different now than what it was back when I first went in 2008.
Definitely is. Here's my BlizzCon tip. If you want a place to chill and hang out and honestly meet a lot of Blizzard employees, go to the Hearthstone Tavern, because they all like to seem to hang. They all seem to like to hang out there. Maybe it's because it's just less hectic, but they're still working. You know, whatever that might be. But it was a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite places to go there. The mood is great. They have like, you know, low chill music, and there's no neon lights flashing in your eyes. You can avoid the concert, which is also kind of nice. And, you know, all those things all at once. Kev, what about you, man? How did you enjoy your time with, we were with Yong Wu and Mike Donay for ours.
Yeah, I mean, the interview process was awesome. Yong has been such a good friend to the show. I actually got to chat with him a bunch at the charity dinner, because I went to that for the first time. So he and I hung out a bit, and I talked to him and Peter Whalen and Christina Sims and a bunch of other people who were there from Team 5 kind of before we ever got to doing the interview. And everything I heard all weekend was just like, I mean, it was excitement, it was interest, but it was also very honest in asking us, you know, how we felt and whether or not, you know, the lines of communication had been improved, whether or not we as a group were sort of excited and looking forward to what was coming next. The whole experience was super good. I'm really thankful that we got the interviews we did. And I hope that, you know, if people get a chance to listen to those either on YouTube or on the feed, they'll have some feedback on what kinds of questions we asked and what we brought to the table. But I felt really good about it. I felt like we were able to get inside a little bit of what they actually were intending to do with the sets thematically, you know, graphically, visually, the VO work, and then also, you know, hit them with some maybe less softball questions, because that seems to be our thing when we get in there and we get started. But yeah, I mean, I hope that you guys had as much fun as I did, because the last 2 weeks have been, there's no words, right? Like, it was the best. And the Hearthstone stuff absolutely made it.
Yep, I totally agree.
Yeah, BlizzCon is one of those things, like, this year, like, even though, like, the announcements weren't up to par to some previous years, like, BlizzCon is all about the experiences. And that's really what it's become. And I feel like this year was beyond more than any other year that I've attended, just because of the experiences.
There was a lot going on. It was, I thought I had a fairly full schedule when I went there. Then I realized, oh crap, I'm trying to do way too many things.
That's me every year. Yeah.
Yep. Had to try to take a step back from a few of them and, you know, keep going. But any other housekeeping stuff from you guys? I know you guys actually, it's a leading question. I know you both have something to talk about before we jump into the news and BlizzCon reactions and everything else.
I just had one thing that is non-BlizzCon related that I wanted to talk about real quick. And I have this blog that I kind of put up, and it was going to be a it's a technical blog about my programming and stuff like that. It's over at jrcook.net. But every once in a while, I'll write something that isn't technical, that's on my mind, that doesn't fit with BlizzPro. And I'm doing something this year, because I kind of feel like right now the world is in kind of a weird, not fun place at the moment. There's a lot of tension, a lot of people arguing for one reason or the other. And it's been going on like that for quite some time. Even though the internet has made us more connected, it also divides us as well in ways, because I think when people communicate on the internet, especially, they don't see that there is a person on the other side of the screen. And something I am doing this year is, if you're like one of those people that has a lot of tension themselves, and or even just wanting that kind of human connection or anything like that, I'm sending out holiday cards this year. And if you are interested in getting a holiday card from me, give me your address. Like, email it to me, jr@jrcook.net or jrcook@blizzpro.com. Message me on Twitter. My DMs are open. Or anything like that. Or even email the wellmet@blizzpro.com one. Just give me your address. I'll add you to the list. And I'll send you a personalized greeting card here in the next month or so.
That's way too nice of you. I'm going to take you up on that, by the way. I want a JR. Yeah. I want a JR holiday card. I really do. I hope.
I don't care. Hopefully I get hundreds of you.
Can I get the One Night in Karazhan costume on that?
No.
Like no. A signed picture of you laying on your side with the chest exposed. No?
I will think about it.
You'll think about it. That's a hard no for those of you
that's
who
a hard
listen.
No.
Listen, and I'm sorry, and don't people, know JR.
And I'm sorry that people had to think about that.
You know, that's all right. Kev, what about you, man?
I just wanted to say a special thank you to everybody who tuned in to all of the other non-WellMet but sort of WellMet stuff that we've had going on the last couple of weeks. Anybody who tuned in on Alpha Geek Radio to listen to myself on the Hearthstone panel or John and Rosh on the Overwatch panel. Anybody who's had a chance to watch the videos from our dev interviews or any of the other BlizzPro content that we worked on while we were physically at BlizzCon, or anybody who took time out of their day back on Monday or Tuesday to watch while I was up with Nathan, that's Admirable Zamora, casting the Tespa Collegiate stuff. Cause that was a lot of fun. Felt really good to be back behind the desk. I struggled through it a little bit because I was fighting off losing my voice and some pretty bad post-convention illness.
Yeah, that has to be like one of the hardest times to cast Hearthstone is right after BlizzCon.
You have no, like, I mean, Nathan had it worse because he'd been working more than I had. But honestly, like, we'd be on screen and we'd both be trying real hard to look presentable and like focus on the camera for like 90 seconds. And then as soon as it faded to the game or a commercial or anything, one or both of us just like lean over, cough and hack. And like, it was gross. I've never felt as awful trying to do something like that as I did this week. So, I mean, I hope it was still okay. I hope people enjoyed it. If you have feedback, hit me up on Twitter. Let me know what you thought, because that stuff's super valuable to me for myself. And it's also really nice. You know, if you felt that it was good and you happen to say that, you know, in a place where other people can read it, that tends to be helpful as well. So thank you again. You guys made that whole experience awesome.
Yeah, that was really cool. I got to tune in for two of the nights. So I got to tune in and watch that. And I've got like 4 pages of feedback, mostly positive.
Color me shocked.
All of it positive and all of it great. I've heard nothing but great things. So kudos to you, sir. I thought it was awesome. You were very eloquent. Surprise. I don't know Kevin Hovdestad to be very eloquent and like deep thought, short deep thought, and then long rant, short deep thought. That was Kevin Hovdestad to a T. It was just you, man. Like, that's the one thing, is you definitely know when there's somebody on the desk who's playing the character or, you know, doing the thing. And you know when someone's up there and it's be like, you know what? If we were sitting down, you know, at a coffee table watching a tournament together, I would be saying the same exact things in the same exact way. So I thought that was really cool, and stay true to that, man. That's really neat. So, news.
This week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
Oh, man, we've got a lot of news. But first, we do want to thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, and Coral. Thank you so much for your support of the show. If you like WellMet, want to help us get to our next goal, which is a bonus episode. If you've been listening to Well Met for a while, you'll notice that our bonus episode, when we hit the milestone, the $400 milestone, we did an extra episode, and we had a Jeopardy episode with Disguised Toast. It was awesome. We want to do more of that stuff for you guys. So if you like the show, want to support even a little bit, $1 gets you a thank you on the show and gets you special privileges on our Discord. It's totally worth it. And then we get to hang out when we, you know, hang out post show or hanging out throughout the week. Hang out with us. So head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. Find out how to get involved. All right, guys, we've got quite a bit to talk through. Normally we go through esports second, but we're going to hit that first. We're going to just get esports out of the way and then start talking about everything else. So Pavel, you may have heard him. He was in Group D in the opening week, and we talked about Pavel a little bit on the show and said that he's dangerous. He's very good, but I don't see a world in which all these other players, which he can win, but he did. He won. But congratulations to Pavel, the new world champion. Had to take it away. United States or NA has only had it once now. One out of three NA. We had Firebat, Ostkaka, and then Pavel. Kevin, I'm gonna pass this one to you first. What were your thoughts overall on HCT this year, our world champion Pavel, and the Hearthstone that was played?
Well, okay, in order, HCT, I think, was a phenomenal success. I think if you, it's hard. Like, I think people sort of lose this perspective, but if you look back at how Hearthstone worked professionally in 2014 and then in 2015, year on year, it's just gotten so much better. Like, the 2016 experience as a viewer was better. The 2016 totally. Experience in terms of engagement level was better. Everything about the storylines, getting to know the players, the accessibility of the entire format, like the whole thing was a massive improvement. And we know already, and we're going to talk later about some of the stuff in 17 that iterates on how well this year went yet again. The Hearthstone World Championship, I thought, was really well done. I really enjoyed the consistent casting pairings. Obviously the stage that they built, was that last year or 2 years ago that they first went to that big stage they've got now? At any rate, beautiful, gorgeous. Like, it's a phenomenal display of what Hearthstone is. The games that were played were excellent. And I think we got to see some of the best Hearthstone that's been played all year at the World Championship, which was great. I know that there are a lot of people who, you know, had thoughts about things like the Pavel Amnesiac series, where he came back from that three-game deficit and got the reverse sweep. I know that there's lots of people who are, you know, looking at the outcomes and feel like it could have gone differently, but I got to hand it to Pavel. When we first started talking about who was going to do well in the Hearthstone World Championship, I identified three players, right? I said the people to watch were Tice, because he's Tice, and he was just working really hard, training really hard, very visibly one of the most prepared competitors. Handsome guy, because he had won two of the three seasons in the Asia-Pacific region and appeared in all three consecutive finals all year. And Pavel, because going into the World Championship, of the 16 players, Pavel was the highest ranked by professional ELO on all the different third-party sites like Gosu Gamers and those kinds of places. He was the highest rated player, second in the world behind Zixo, but the highest rated of all the people who were playing in the tournament. And then he won. Like, I think that says a great deal about the credibility of where the best players rank and how they line up. You see the results go consistently to the people who play the best. And in that respect, I think it was like a roaring success to see the strongest player walk away as the victor.
Yeah, that's something that I really noticed is, you know, we talked through every single seasonal championship about, this is kind of weird. There's a lot of players we don't know. There's a lot of players that we're not sure if they are the best players in the world in Hearthstone, or if this is just some sort of equation thanks to RNG and some randomness and some luck in the length of time a player has to go through to qualify and then to win. But at the end of it all, when I look at all the players who are in the World Championship, and I really do believe that there were some that were better than others, And I'm very glad that a player like Pavel was the one to take it home. I really wanted an Amnesiac to take it home. I look back at Amnesiac's whole world championship stint and how he got there, and I go, wow, he played really, really well. I cannot see really very many, if any, turns where I'm like, ooh, after I've spent 20 minutes dissecting this turn and, you know, thinking about it, he maybe should have, you know, done this. And even when he was interviewed, he's like, yeah, I played the right thing. I played around this and I did this and I was, you know, planning on doing this, and it just didn't go my way. And he even sent out what I thought was amazing. Amnesiac, they did some short or little interview segments with him called, or what do they refer to him as, Young Savage. And they talked to him about how he's kind of this ruthless, cutthroat, you know, young guy who's, you know, just kind of saying what's on his mind. But if you were paying attention on Twitter after Pavel won, and there was a lot of people, I would say people who don't understand Hearthstone very well, you know, the people who know enough to bash it and, you know, talk crap about it, but not enough to, you know, play well, let alone understand great plays, you know, we're out and be like, oh, Pavel got lucky and he was, you know, doing this and, you know, Amnesiac should have won. And he went off. He's like, hey, Pavel played really freaking well. He deserves to be the world champion. And I thought that was great class from Amnesiac, who I wanted to win. But again, I think, who did we say was going to win? I think we were like, Amnesiac was one. Basically, we are like 1 for 9 overall for series that we've guessed about on the show. So going forward, go ahead.
I did say Amnesiac or Pavel was a coin flip, and whoever won that was going to at least go to the finals.
I think we kind of all agreed. Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah. We all agreed with that. And, you know, that was it. So you're welcome. If you picked one Pavel, thing I thought, thanks to us, you're welcome for those 6 free TGT packs.
One thing I thought was super cool, we talked about a little bit in the studio after the final was over while I was there to cast the TESPA stuff, was the level of hand reading that Pavel and, I mean, everybody really that weekend was doing. At any given time, any player in any set basically knew down to the individual card what their opponent was holding, because they'd seen the deck lists, they'd had time to prepare, and they were playing around not just like what are his outs, but quite literally he's got 4 cards in his hands and it's these 4 cards. And that's an incredible skill that it doesn't get, I think, as much attention as it maybe deserves outside of Hearthstone at that level, because it's one thing to be like, oh, next turn is turn 7. I'm playing against a mage. I should play around Flamestrike. Like that's a skill, and knowing enough about the game to understand that is good. But we're talking about identifying down to the individual card exactly what your opponent is holding and what they're planning because of that. I mean,
it's like what they do in poker. It's like those crazy poker players.
Like, go back and watch any one game and just stop and look at the game state and think about what the player is thinking about as they sit and do the math to identify every card left in their opponent's hand and deck. Like, that's insane. And I could play Hearthstone for the rest of my life, and I will never be that good at it. So, I mean, credit where credit's due. Pavel was the best of the best at that. And that's, I think, why he won.
Yeah, I thought of all the tournaments so far, this was definitely the best one. Just because of that. And like getting to learn the players, like we didn't know some of these names beforehand. I mean, some of them we did, some of them we didn't. And it was kind of cool to the little segments they did during the week and the little interviews they did with them to kind of learn their stories and things like that. I thought they did a really good job with all of that. If I had any like one criticism, and it's a fairly small one, is I really think that when they finally go to the top 8, I think they need to think about seeding them a little bit differently. Because last year, I felt like the best game that won the championship was the semifinals. And I feel like this year,
you're talking about the Tyson Osaka.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. And I feel like this year, the final was really in round 1 between Amnesiac and Pavel.
I think that happens though. Like that's going to eventually happen. You see that March Madness all the time where Two phenomenal basketball teams play each other in the round of 32 or even 16. And it's a seeding thing. I don't know if you can ever get away with that without being unfair about it.
I don't know. I feel like maybe the results after the top 16 is done and you go to the top 8, like just reseeding them based on the results from that top 16, maybe. And then going that direction. I know NCAA football
change the seeding.
I don't know how
the seeding. The seeding going into top 8 is
based on win loss.
Yeah, you can't play someone. You won't play someone from the same group you were in until the final, and you don't run into somebody who finished the same place in the group stage as you did. So if you won a group, you're playing somebody who came in second in a group, and then your right. second place person in your group is at the other side of the bracket.
Right. Okay. So they do that. Right.
I think the only thing that stuck out to me, like the Amnesiac Pavel series, feels like it was the most important because it was basically it was the only series in the top 8 that went to 7 games, right? And of the series that did go to 7 games, it's one of the only ones that was super memorable. Like Tice's series went to 7. Some of the like other group stage stuff, Naaman was eliminated in 2 series that went to 7. Those feel really memorable compared to, you know, like the 4-0 blowout series. But I don't know. I mean, I thought the top 8 was really, really good. And I watched the semis and the final and felt like, yeah, I mean, these are some of the best Hearthstone games I've watched, regardless of the fact that they were decided by, you know, games right. 6 or in some cases 5.
And I know what JR is saying. I think at the end of it, no matter what sport you watch, whether it's football or esports or whatever, you want the last game of the season to be the best one, right? Like that's just natural. Right. You want the climax to be at the end, the grand championship, the finals, and I get that. And I totally agree with you. My favorite series probably to watch was Amnesiac and Pavel, not because they're players that I both knew very well, but they were also just really good players, right? They're just really good at Hearthstone, and I would watch them play 16 times. If I could right. just watch them go head to head. I think they actually did a show match after. No, that was somebody different. Never mind. But I get where you're coming from, but I still feel like overall the top 8 was great.
It was. It's just when I looked at the brackets, and we even talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, this Pavel Amnesiac feels like a coin flip, and whoever wins it is going to probably go to the finals.
Right.
And by seeing that early on, I was like, you know, I wish that Pavel was on the bottom half, and you might have seen an Amnesiac Pavel final in that regard. But either way, I really enjoyed it. So as I said, it was just a very minor criticism is all.
Right. I think a fair one. So in the end, congratulations to Pavel, the 2016 Hearthstone World Championship. Or champion, well-deserved. Congratulations, sir. And hopefully we see great things from you to come. We've got more news to talk about. Is it all right if we go on here? We're already a half an hour in, and we haven't even touched the big news yet. Not that that's not big news, but we've got bigger news. Let's talk about it.
Ah, Geshetzan, the city of opportunity.
Yeah, that's right. We've got a new expansion. This is pretty exciting, and nobody called it, but it is based in Gadgetzan. So huge,
yeah, we didn't see that coming.
Way out of left field there. I had no idea that it was coming from Gadgetzan. But, you know, hey, sometimes we get a curveball from the Hearthstone team. That's right, though. The Mean Streets of Gadgetzan is the newest Hearthstone expansion, quote, emphasis on JR and I, not adventure, expansion. So 132 new Hearthstone cards are going to be coming to us in early December. Very exciting. We have 3 new factions, the Jade Lotus, the Grimy Goons, and the... all I remember is Kazakus. It's a really weird one. The Potion Makers. What are they called? Come on, give me something. The Cabal. Thank you. The Cabal. There it is. 3 new factions, some pretty cool stuff that they're talking about in this newest expansion. A couple of things. Turn down the gadget. I mean, it can now. Oh, there's gadgets and audio. Sorry about that, guys. Boom. There wasn't playing for me before. Sorry about that. I thought I had the audio off. For video listeners, I apologize, but I can't fix that. So you are in trouble unless I get very motivated to piece it together. Anyways, so the, hey, pushing buttons is hard, chat. Listen here. Pushing buttons is difficult. If any of you guys want to come do it, I'll teach you how for 1 week and we'll see how you do. I'm just kidding. I'm salty. Anyways, we've got lots of cool stuff to talk about. First and foremost, it is available for pre-order on the Hearthstone website. $49.99 for 50 packs. So quite a deal there if you're looking to get a head start. I am hoping that we will do a well-met card pack opening stream again. Because oh, those are always fun. We usually make a drinking game about it. So we'll
get JR to craft some bad golden legendaries.
Yes. How's that golden variant rent treating you, by the way, JR?
I mean, it's still there. It sits there. I think I played it a couple times.
You have to after you craft a golden legendary.
Yeah, be like, you know, damn it. I guess I'm playing Control Warrior again. Used to be good when you had like Sludge Belcher in there and, you know, you could get some really good. Anyways, Gadget San, you know, we've got this is pretty cool. So I think it hit all the big stuff. One more thing. The official site does have kind of what they do quite a bit is the voting. So you can vote on members of the community to reveal their card. And they'll reveal it based on the card art. And that's pretty cool. So that's also there at playhearthstone.com. It's somewhere there. The links are there. No pre-purchase perk. Not like a card back or anything like that. And that is, Kevin, is that ever? I think that's ever.
Well,
Nax
no.
Ramis
so
maybe the, didn't have
there
one?
Were, yeah, there were none for Curse of Naxxramas or for Goblins vs. Gnomes back in the day. But there has been for every other expansion or adventure since, with the notable and singular exception of League of Explorers. So ever since, basically in the history of the stuff that we've been covering on Well Met, right back to Black Rock Mountain, because that's kind of when we got started, League of Explorers was the only one that didn't. And it sort of felt like that was maybe just a byproduct of the timing, right? It came out like the day after BlizzCon or something ridiculous, and that how fast it got turned around. They really, I think, just wanted it in people's hands, wanted people playing it ASAP. There was no time to have a pre-order window. But I mean, Black Rock Mountain did, TGT did, Whispers obviously did, and then even One Night in Karazhan did. So there's a lot of precedent for that, but a part of me thinks this is intentional. We've obviously talked a lot in weeks gone by about the switch back and forth between expansions versus adventures and how they have to sustain that for standard to work. And this being an expansion, it felt like maybe they would do a big pre-order. Maybe they would have a big push to try and get people kind of involved in that. But with the, I think maybe with the response to Heroic Tavern Brawl and the cost barrier to that, and the fact that people have saved up a ton of in-game currency because there were such long windows between sets this year, I think maybe that's part of it, is they'd actually rather not have you drop the 40 or 50 bucks on a pre-order and instead like run through all of your in-game currency and kind of reset that counter a little bit. Because everybody I know who's been playing any amount of Hearthstone has thousands of gold saved up for this expansion. Like, people are going to be buying anywhere.
I don't know
from
what you're talking about. No way.
Yeah, I don't either.
Okay,
what are you talking about?
I everybody I've asked, it's like,
so Kevin knows a few
2 to 10,000. I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's just a bad anecdote, but
you didn't ask me.
I didn't pull you.
Didn't
two,
ask
that's true,
me
so
either. And I played a lot.
At any rate,
played a lot.
I think it's a good strategy. I'm kind of glad that they're just letting people enjoy the expansion and not feel like they're missing out on a card back because they don't have 50 bucks to drop right before the holidays. Like, that actually, I think, feels really good. So despite it being kind of a surprise and a departure from like history, I like it.
Yep.
Yeah. I thought it was also interesting to note that they're doing it through the website and not through the client this time. because in previous times you could pre-order it through the client, but this time they went straight through the website. I don't know why they did that or the reasons behind it, but it is what it is. So it's kind of different.
I wonder if they just haven't released the game update that would include the like art assets and stuff. It could be any number of things.
Yep.
Right.
So, all right. So before we jump into the card reviews, what would we be as a Hearthstone podcast if we did not do card reviews? Before we jump into though, here's kind of the general story of Mean Streets of Gadgets. That you guys shaked your head at the same time. That was adorable. So basically the story goes, there's these three factions in Gadget Sand: the Cabal, the Grimy Goons, and the Jade Lotus. The Jade Lotus. I'm going to be really good at remembering these factions. And basically, they're kind of these warring factions. It's kind of mobster-ish. Every time I hear the theme song, I think of like the first Batman TV show. You remember those back in the day where he's just like a detective and not really a beefed up superhero?
Feels a lot like Dick Tracy in a way as well.
Yeah. Totally does. And so it's these warring factions, and they both have their own kind of things that they're known for. The Cabal have these like potions, and the Grimy Goons have these weapons. The Jade Lotus have these assassins and ninjas. It's all really cool flavor-wise. And that's kind of roughly what's going on. We're going to talk about tri-class. Let's talk about tri-class cards. The big, big thing that was introduced, and we didn't call it, and I'm not aware of anybody else that called it, was these tri-class cards. So basically, now you have these tri-class cards where basically they can be played by one of three different classes. I don't have them all memorized. Do either of you have the list handy? Kevin, you got
it. Not handy, but the Grimy Goons are warrior, paladin.
I could probably do it from
Cabal,
memory.
Yeah, Cabal is Cabal mage, is the three cloth wearers,
mage, warlock, priest.
Priest.
Yeah. The weird one Lotus is what? Rogue, shaman, druid?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. And so that one feels a little awkward.
The Grimy Goons is hunter, warrior, and paladin.
Yep.
Yeah. Boom. It's all weapon classes.
We did it. Got it. So that's it. That's pretty cool. Tri-class cards are pretty exciting. What are you guys' thoughts before we go into review these cards? What do you think of this concept of tri-class cards in Hearthstone?
I super dig it. I think it's awesome. I know like in the shows before we went to BlizzCon, we had talked about how Blizzard had to do something new with this card set because there wasn't really room for a big tribe, and they didn't have any mechanics that we thought they were going to explore anything really aggressive with. We're seeing them reuse stuff that has been successful. And I know, John, you mentioned it in our interview with them about how they're being really not liberal, but they continue to print and discover expansion after expansion, unlike how Inspire is kind of just gone by the wayside and we'll probably never see it again. So I think it's a really smart idea because it lets them evaluate power level for cards without needing to, because before this, you either had to print a class card or a neutral, right? That was the only way you could go. And it left very little room to say, you know, we'd really love to give a spell that does X to both of these two classes, right? Or to all of these classes. You couldn't ever do anything that crossed those barriers. So I definitely feel like that's a design space that they've done something really clever with, because now if they want to introduce, for example, a really powerful weapon, but have it available to more than one class, they can totally get away with that. If they want to introduce a spell to a class that traditionally wouldn't have gotten that spell as a one-off thing because it feels good in more than one class, then great. And it opens up a lot of really cool new ideas that we didn't really have before this. Plus the crazy interactions that will be available because of things like being able to discover a cross-class card. The discover mechanic, when it pulls from tri-class, gives you one card from each of the three classes in that faction. So you know you're always going to have the option to pull like a paladin and a hunter minion in warrior, which could actually be really, really powerful depending on how it plays out. I love it. Like, I think it's a really smart way to solve the class agnostic neutral only problem, because they could never have printed a neutral spell or a neutral weapon, but now they can kind of get around that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool idea. I like, out of all of the things that were revealed with Hearthstone, this was the biggest and the most surprising and the most awesome, in my opinion. There's only 9 cards, though, so there's only 3 for each faction. And I kind of wish that there was more, and I kind of wish that they had some spells as well, because right now they're all minions. And maybe there will be spells. We haven't seen them all yet. They haven't all been revealed yet, but it looks like they're probably going to be all minions, which would fit the kind of neutral category that they are kind of sort of in. I dig it. I think it opens up a lot of new ways to play, and I'm really excited to see like what kind of like, you know, if I'm playing hunter, what kind of like warrior cards I might be able to pull and discover and things like that and be able to play.
I'm going to can I make the biggest, boldest prediction that we've ever made on this show? Can I do that? Am I allowed to?
My sarcasm meter is lit right up. Let's hear it.
I'm going to say that we are at least 2 years away from a new class. At least 2 years away.
I don't think it's
going to happen. I don't even think it's on the radar. I don't think we're anywhere close, if ever, going to see a new class. And I think Tri-Class kind of proves that a little bit. So you're welcome. You heard it here first. No new classes on the horizon for Hearthstone.
Yeah, I don't think there will ever be one in the existence of the game, to be honest. What I would like to see, though, is I do wonder if they will continue doing these tri-class cards. And if they do, if they're going to keep the same factions, basically, throughout, like, you know, the next set, they might do more. Are they still going to keep the same names that they have?
Nah.
You know, because it doesn't feel like they should. But what I hope they don't do is I hope they don't do tri-class cards with 3 different, like, you know, they do another set where it's, you know, 3 completely different classes, you know, combined. I hope that if they do tri-class cards in the future, that they stick with the factions that they are currently in, because then it gets a little confusing, I think, to try to remember, especially if they're in the same standard format or even in wild.
I don't know if we see tri-class cards after this.
I honestly don't know.
Purely from a design standpoint, it seems like a nightmare. Now, can you make up 3 new factions that, you know, come up with the same thing? But like, I don't see them doing it. I think it's kind of like mechs in GVG. We had our time with mechs and they cycled out for the most part. And maybe we'll get another mech expansion in the future and be able to do that again. But you're not seeing two mech expansions overlapping in standard.
There are some cool things that it could do, though, right? Like down the road, for example, historically, I think we can all off the top of our heads, for example, name the classes that could play mech decks, right? Or that could play dragon decks. Like there was always a sort of a targeted, like these classes are meant to be good at playing dragons. And we can basically run down that list. So maybe they decide that that's part of how they solve it, is in the future they print minions that are allied to a specific set of classes, right? That they will only serve a warrior, a hunter, or a paladin. And they can change how those combinations or permutations are put together. Like, I don't see that as being a problem. I just think it's awesome that they're starting to tear down the wall on the really major class barriers. Like, we've seen them do this a little bit in the past, right? Like way back when they kind of did this with Renounced Darkness, for example. Renounced Darkness was a way that you could get access to class cards from a different class. They started to push it with the peddler style rogue. Like they've been doing this in ways. So I think it's maybe the factions and tri-class specifically is not something that sticks around after this expansion. But I think the core concept of cards that are available to more than one class, but not neutral, is definitely here to stay.
Oh, totally. 100%. I hope anything I said did not allude to that. Because, like, I think they like that. I think that that's their one way to get around that your class is only this and only does this and shares no identity with anywhere else. It's a way to get around that homogenization without homogenizing. What a novel idea. Can we talk about cards here? Is that okay? Because
yes,
we're 50 yes. minutes in and we haven't talked about cards yet. I know, Jerry, you had
3-hour well-met special coming at you, boys.
Right. Oh my God. All right. Let's go ahead and talk about it. Let's talk about some neutral minions first. Nothing fancy as far as the color of their gem or the class they belong to, but some pretty intriguing cards here. First, we've got Dirty Rat. It's a 2-mana, 2/6 epic neutral card. Reads, taunt, battle cry. Your opponent summons a random minion from their hand. Deathlord? 2.0? But worse? Deathlord 2.0, but worse?
It could be good.
Worse. I think it's way better.
Yeah, it could be good. I depending on how your opponent mulliganed, and depending on, because you know when you mulligan, you want to curve out, right? So you're trying to get, you know, a 1-cast spell, maybe a 2-cast spell, 3-cast spell, etc. So you're trying for the low cost cards. But there's that one time you might mulligan, and you're like, oh, in my opening hand, I have Ragnaros. And then your opponent plays Dirty Rat, and it's like, oh, cool, I got to turn 2 Ragnaros in play now. That's the only time it would really backfire. But the chances of that happening are fairly low.
It's coming from your deck, though, right?
Yeah, it's a narrow range. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's cool, though. Like, I think people have kind of misunderstood what this card is for. This card is not designed to replace Deathlord. It's not just a pure anti-aggro tool.
I mean, they can't just reprint it, but sorry.
No, but you're not going to slap this in Priest and say, okay, this solves my early game woes because it lets your opponent, you know, just cheat out a card that they weren't going to be able to get before. This is really, in my mind, designed as a way to nullify a bunch of play effects on cards or as part of a removal suite. Right. So imagine, for sake of argument, that you're playing against one of the classes that utilizes very few minions right now, classes like Rogue or Druid, and they're sitting there and they're trying to build up the big combo and they're holding back on their Gadgets and Auctioneer or their Malagos or whatever. But you happen to put this into a deck where you're running Dirty Rat as a one of as a tech card. And you also happen to have like a Mulch or an Assassinate or a Shield Slam, take your pick, like whatever it would be. And instead of allowing your opponent to set up their critical combo turn, you haul the big minion out of their hand that you know they're holding back and kill it before they ever actually get to put together their combo turn. Like, that's where I see this card getting the most play.
I think that's where I see the card being the best, but I don't know if we've ever seen enough combo cards or enough minion reliant combos. We've been seeing it a little bit with Malagos, but besides Malagos, I don't know if we've seen enough minion reliant combos to actually do that, let alone, like, I don't think you hold on to this card. I think if you play this card, it's because you want it on turn 2, and I think it's totally anti-aggro. I do think it's worse than Deathlord. At the same time, though, Deathlord was probably too strong. And, you know, it seems a little bit more fair. One less cost, 2 less health. The downside of it being it's a battle cry, right? So as soon as you slap this down, your opponent more than likely is going to have a minion. Now, it's probably not going to be a Ragnaros unless they mulliganed and it came in a part of their mulligan or one of their draws.
Yeah, that's the situation I was talking about, right? Where it ended up in their hand.
The likelihood of it biting you in the butt is not as much, but it's also kind of, assuming you get it on turn 2, it's also kind of giving them 4 mana or, you know, 5 mana or whatever if it comes out right away like that. So, and I think it gets worse as the game progresses. Whereas with Deathlord, it didn't necessarily. It was kind of always playable. I mean, more it was more what's the word, desirable in the early game. But if you got it late, it wasn't completely a dead draw, and it could stop and eat a couple minions in aggro. I don't know. I think this is a fine card, but it's super aggro, anti-aggro, in my opinion.
Sure. Well, and against pure aggro decks, it's an on-curve play that likely is able to, at minimum two, more likely three for one, which is incredible and super good in the classes that have a ton of buff abilities right now. This is going to see lots of play in Priest and Paladin for that kind of reason. But I really do think people are going to tech this as a one of to shut down combos, the same way that you played Lotheb. Right, you use it as a way to find that critical turn where somebody's going to try to swing some big clever thing, especially with cards that have big battle cry effects or big static body effects or big end of turn effects, and be able to just stop it cold in its tracks. And that, like, the flexibility is what excites me about this card.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's going to find a place in some decks. You're going to see it. You're not going to see it everywhere, but you're going to see it.
Yep. Okay, let's talk about this.
We should note, too, that this was the last thing that Metzen worked on in Hearthstone. This was actually right. His idea for a card, like art and name and style. Ben Brode mentioned that on Twitter. So yep. That was one of the last things Metzen did before he retired was design Dirty Rat.
Yep. Let's talk about this next one. It's Doppelgangster. It's a 5-mana 2/2 rare neutral minion. Reads, Battlecry, summon 2 copies of this minion. So essentially for 5 mana, you're getting 3 2/2s.
Force of nature.
Which is a minion-based force of nature. So it's not affected by spell reduction or spell increased cards. This is interesting. Obviously, exciting synergies are like Bran, ones that immediately, you know, give you a more powerful version of that battle cry. I'm meh on this. I'm meh. I don't know if I want 3 2/2s on turn 5.
Well, I mean, this goes in to any kind of Grimy Goons deck that you're going to do, because as you will see with the Grimy Goons that are out there now, there's a lot of cards out there that buff minions in your hand. So early on, if you have this in your hand and you're playing some Grimy Goons that randomly up this guy, then this card gets a lot better because then you're putting out 3 4/4s or 3 5/5s, depending on how much you buffed them. And I think that's where you could potentially see him in play, is with decks like that. I think beyond that, I don't think you're going to see him.
Do all the 2/2s cost 5 mana? Does their mana cost 5?
Yes. So if they're identical minions, so it'd be super good in Evolve. It's also going to be, I think, just a very common, like, this is going to be the top end of the curve of the new aggro paladin, because all the new aggro paladin stuff has, you know, give minions in your hand +1/+1, give your minions +1/+1, you know, give adjacent minions divine shields. It's just going to be a really easy way to quickly slam down a big board that's going to be very difficult to answer. Because if you're getting 6/6 across the 3 bodies for 5, like Force of Nature, that's kind of okay, not good, but not awful. But as soon as those come down as 3/3s or 4/4s, or heaven forbid anything larger than that, like, it has the potential to be game ruining. If you could summon 3 4/4 minions for 5 mana, like, that's the end of the game in some respects. Because there's very little in the game that can answer that.
Just Flame Strike, Doom, Twisting Nether.
Yeah, Twisting Nether, stuff like that. It's a big potential. It's one of those cards that's really synergy dependent, which means it could be really awkward. If you draw it too early and you don't get the effects that hit it, or it's just a dead card in your hand, or you draw it too late and you didn't get to hit it with all of those buff effects, it ends up being kind of a wash. But I think it's a risk you take in a board flood style deck, is to have that kind of thing come together. I mean, that's it's the same as Zoo or every other flood deck. If you get the right combos off in the right order, you win.
Yep. I think that one's fairly straightforward. We'll see. It needs a lot of synergies to work. And if it has enough synergies, it's probably broken. But if it doesn't have enough, it probably doesn't ever see play. So we'll see. Next up, we've got Fel Orc Soul Fiend. It's a 3-mana 3/7. At the start of your turn, deal 2 damage to this minion. So you play it. It is a 3/7. Next turn, it's a 3/5 without taunt. So it's a tauntless Senjin Shieldmaster 4/3. And then obviously there's some interesting stuff to do with heals here. So honestly, this is one of the neutral cards that I think might sneak in to be really good. It's just there's, especially with some of the cards that we're seeing with Priest, I'm like, ooh, this might be kind of really good. Maybe we'll see Earthen Ring Farseer come back and those other, you know, kind of healing minions. And I'm like, okay, I can see where this is going. I don't think you play it in non-heal classes, honestly. I don't think it's good enough there. But overall, I think a really, really solid minion here. What do you think, JR?
No, I basically agree with you. Like, I've been looking at these cards that have been coming out, and it's interesting that Blizzard has done a pretty good job of this set on going, hey, you know all you priests that have been pretty upset about things lately? Well, here are some cards that are probably going to be pretty good in your priest deck in this next expansion. And I think this is one of them. And I think it's really good stats for 3-mana. And that is something that priest needs. Like Dirty Rat, I feel, could potentially also be really good in a priest deck as well. And then if you drop something like this as well, I don't know. I just think the neutral minions and what priest has, priest has a really good shot at possibly being good when the set is released.
I mean, I think this is a crazy good card, and I think it's basically a strictly better Injured Blade Master for everything with the notable exception of Resurrect. And Resurrect is going to rotate, right? So when Resurrect rotates, this becomes a strictly better Injured Blade Master. It also has the benefit of, if you have cards that you want to play that require heals for triggering them, you're going to be able to get that very consistently because it's start of turn, right? So at the start of your turn, this thing hurts itself, and now you've got the ability to set up your Northshire Cleric or your Holy Champion or take your pick, whatever it ends up being, right? We may see more of those types of cards yet, to say nothing of the fact that, I mean, the stat line, like a 3/7 for 3 is scary good, sets up an enormous Purify if people decide to stick with that, because 3/7 for 3 for 2 cards is, I mean, it's just a strictly better Injured Blade Master. Like, it's, I think this is going to be something that people will try very hard to make work. It's also, I would say, basically the biggest stat line we've ever seen on a 3 drop, right? Like, this is, what's the beast, the 3/5 that can only attack after you've attacked? Silithid Swarmer? Yeah. Silithid Swarmer is maybe the only other thing that even comes close, or like Blackwing Technician, but it's all triggered stuff where you have to have special edge case requirements met in order to get a 3/5 for 3. And this starts at that level.
Yeah. I think Deathlord had the same stat line, though.
No, Purify. Deathlord was 2/8.
Oh, well, yeah, 2/8. I was going by 10 total.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah, with a different, arguably worse drawback. But yeah, I mean, I think this card definitely is one that a lot of people are going to try to make fit in Priest. And I think there's a strong argument to be made that it'll be one of the best 3 drops in Priest, especially after Resurrect rotates.
And it's going to make Purify really good. Here we come. Purify Priest, it's coming. I'm just kidding. Let's move on. So we talked about some of the neutral non-legendaries. Let's talk about some neutral legendaries. First up, we've got Auction Master Kevin. I mean, Beardo. It's a 3-mana 3/4 that reads, after you cast a spell, refresh your hero power. This is kind of intriguing. It's solid stat line for 3, right? I mean, we played Spider Tank, and that was a 3-mana 3/4. So intriguing stat line. Kevin, what are your thoughts here?
I mean, stat line-wise, it's cool. I think if it was going to be good, you would have seen lots more play of the other 3-4 for threes, like the Valkyr Twins, which were also arguably enormously powerful and triggered by spells, like basically the exact same problem. Now, granted, those were only buff spells, not any spell. But I mean, this looks like it could occupy a slot in the short term in something like Shaman, as a way to help you set up big turns in tandem with Thunderbluff Valiant. I also think it's a really interesting late game tech for Warrior, for as long as we have Justicar Trueheart in play, being able to throw this down and then play a couple of your cheap removal spells or your cheap cycling spells, and then be able to sneak in a couple of extra tank ups. But on the whole, hero powers are too expensive, and there's too little hero power synergy in the game right now, and a lot of the hero power synergy is going away with TGT. So it might be a fun thing in the short term, and a big impact temporarily on like one season of HCT 2017 or something. But long term, I don't think anyone's going to care. I don't think there's anything going on with hero powers that makes this enormously desirable.
Yeah, I'm not too keen on this card. It's an interesting concept, but I don't know. I don't see ever playing it, and it'll be one of those legendaries that I open and go, yep, this is going to sit in my collection for a while until I find something potentially down the road that would make this card really cool to play. And by the time that happens, it'll probably be in Wild.
Yeah, so there's just,
I think that's where it's going to be great, is Wild.
There's a few classes who have cheap enough spells to where it's like, okay, well, let's think about it and talk it through. Shaman, which I don't know, like generating a bunch of totems isn't that helpful, especially not to spam a bunch of cheap spells to do it.
Rogue doesn't help at all.
Rogue doesn't want a rogue, hero power
again,
so.
Yeah, it doesn't. You can't like get a bigger hero power. You could back in beta. That would have been cool, right? You used to get
poison blade
plus,
synergy, yeah. Boys.
Yeah.
So you had that. The only one that I see is there might be some interesting uses in Hunter, right? Especially with like lock and load in combination with some of those not cheap spells, but less expensive spells to, you know, chip off, you know, 6-8 damage in a turn, especially with some of those synergies. But again, a lot of them are going away. Might be more of a wild card. And then obviously Druid is there, which I don't know how much +1/+1, you know, one attack, one armor really helps. So 3 out of 10.
It'd be super cool in tandem with something like Savage Combatant in Druid. But again, like, as soon as you start having to be like, well, if I have this card in play and if I play this on curve and if I have the mana to hero power 3 times in a turn plus cast 2 spells, like you've already run down so many weird one-off combinations of requirements that like it can't be good, because the number of times where that situation would come up at that point, every card is good. Like that's where you're winning the game by playing Priest. It's not going to matter.
Yep. Yep. I totally agree. Let's go on to the next one. We've got Finja, the Flying Star. He's a 5-mana, 2/4 Murloc, reads stealth. Whenever this attacks and kills a minion, summon 2 Murlocs from your deck. Murloc deck players are probably fairly excited to try this one out. There's some cool opportunities from here. But JR, what do you think about this card?
The only time I will play this card is when I have my Murloc achievement that I need to complete. Or that's if true. I just want to play
they're
a fun
they're just
Murloc
trying to help
deck.
You play 75 Murlocs.
Right. No, I mean, for a Murloc card, it's cool. I like it. I like the design and everything. If they come out with more Murlocs, it could be even better. But right now, I'm just like, if I want to play Murlocs, this might get included in my Murloc deck that I want to play. But I don't see it being a super competitive card. But if you enjoy building, you know, theme decks like Murloc decks, then it's great.
Yep. Kev, what do you think?
I mean, it's an inspired idea. It seems like it could be a lot
of
fun.
Slow.
Well, it's crazy slow. It's vulnerable to a gazillion kinds of removal. And even if it does work and you happen to get, a chance to pull 2 or more Murlocs out of your deck, like, And for five mana, like you're waiting to turn six to suddenly pull some emergency Murlocs out of your deck in a like a swarm deck where you're trying to lay down the best thing you can on curve every turn. Like I'm trying to imagine a world like you need this in your hand when somebody plays a Dirty Rat, right? That's the only way it's going to work. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not thrilled.
Yeah, I don't love it. It's too slow. Like Murloc, the only slow Murloc deck that works is Murloc Paladin. Does this help Murloc Paladin? Sure, I guess if you play it, but you've already had to play it and had it, you know, kill something for it to be that good. And
then, yeah, it's, I would rather play something else.
I would need to ask the King of the Fish, Freshka, see what he thinks about Murloc Finja. But overall, I'm not wild about this card. Let's just go.
I'll play it in wild.
In wild, it'll be super good.
Yep, that's true. Well, let's go on to the next one then. We've got Madame Goya. She's a 6-mana 4/3. Reads battle cry, choose a friendly minion, swap it with a minion in your deck. And that's a random minion, by the way. It's not a specific minion. You don't get a discover type thing showing 12 other cards on your screen. So you don't get to choose which minion it is. So I'm giving this one a giant. Ooh. Gotta say it. I don't like it. I don't like it. It's like a worse, really expensive brand with, sure, there are some things where this might be really great. You get that full-costed Deathwing or really Yashiraj is what Disguised Toast was the one who revealed this, and he showed a video of Madame Goya pulling out a Yashiraj in exchange for a Tiny Fin Murloc, and it's just, I don't see it working right now. I don't see it working.
I'm with you that I don't see it working, but I really like the design of the card, and I like the potential possibilities that you can pull off some pretty fun stuff with it. You might be able to pull off. I think this guy's just even had it in his where he could Reno and then take back Reno and swap it out, and then you get Reno again later.
If it was a 4/4,
12 mana.
Yeah, if it was a 4/4 or a 5/5, 4/4 would go, ooh, this is interesting. I like this. 5/5 would go, ooh, this is pretty broken. But 4/3, too low of a stat line. Kev, what do you think?
I mean, I think you hit all the salient stuff. The stat line isn't great. If it was cheaper, it would be way too powerful. The synergies that make sense to me all basically rely again on you being in a position where you are authoritatively ahead. Like, yeah, this would be super good if you, you know, put down a Ysera and trade with it a couple times in a class that can't heal. And then you use Madame Goya to throw Ysera back into your deck so you can redraw her at full health later. And you get to exchange her for immediate board presence from something else that might have immediate impact. Like, there's definitely a strong argument to be made for that. But this feels to me a lot like, hilariously, actually, since we were making fun of JR about the Varian earlier, it feels like the exact same problem. There are so many legendaries where you need a big battle cry, where you need an activation of some kind. And I'm imagining that you would tailor your deck to Madame Goya. You would tailor your deck to try and narrow down the number of cards that it can hit, much like the gimmick Barnes Hunter that JR was running as well. Like, there's definitely stuff about it that's I don't know, just every use case I can think of for it ends up circling back to it's going to require too much setup. And if it requires too much setup, you can't expect to play it on curve. You can't. It would have been super cool with some of the duplicating minions. Like, this would be a really awesome on curve play behind like a patron in Grim Patron Warrior, right, where you could throw an extra patron back in your deck, and even if the first board happens to get cleared, well, you just gave yourself a spare patron for later. Like, there's certainly stuff like that that could be good, but I like 6 out of 10.
I will say this: if there this is the one card that would not surprise me if somebody finds just like this stupid broken interaction with it.
You said exactly what I was going
to. They're going to find it like a freeze mage with, you know, some sort of, you know, where you only run like four cards and it'll pull out like a Thorason for you or something like that. And I could see that happen, but still it's just, I would not be excited about this card.
This card, it's going to be a card that people are going to try to experiment with and make work. And so you're going to see it, you know, in the first few weeks. And if someone gets it to stick, then you might potentially see it in a really good deck. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
But people will try to make it work.
It'll be in a really good deck the way that the Barnes Hunter was a really good deck. You'll get people with the element of surprise. There'll be one or two times where you get a Trolden worthy moment out of it. But 90% of the time, it's going to be way too expensive, way too slow, and way too combo-y.
Yep.
Although, I mean, in the end, right, to play this card, you need what, and to be an on-par stat line, you're looking at, like, what, 2-3? Essentially, if you pull out a 2-3 minion, you just played 6-6 for 6. So,
depending on what you cycled back into your deck, yeah.
Right. Like, assuming you get a good trade-off, right? Like, you know, there could be worse. I just don't see enough where the randomness is consistent enough where it actually helps you versus hurting you. Because if you're running a deck with a bunch of big threats, means that you're probably cycling a big threat back into your deck to be able to play it. Or you're holding on to a one mana or two mana drop just to, you know, do that. And you're doing two cards and it's just meh.
Well, the one argument I heard was maybe you use it in Paladin and you use it on one of the tokens that you generate with your hero power, which sounds great, right? You trade the 1/1 for the Deathwing in your deck until you realize that now on some key turn in the future, your top deck is going to be a 1/1 Silverhand Recruit, right? Like, it's just very difficult to imagine a good outcome from it that isn't just you get lucky and happen to slam down, you know, Ragnaros instead of a Totem on turn 6.
Right. I didn't think about the implications for Shaman and Paladin. There are some there, but still, I don't think it's that good. Let's keep trudging on because we still have four cards to talk about. Patches the Pirate. It's a 1-mana, 1/1 pirate, reads charge. No, just regular charge. After you play a pirate, summon this minion from your deck. They showed some cool synergies from this, and he gets shot out by a cannon from your deck, which I think is amazing. But, you know, the pirates are slowly building up an arsenal, but just like Beast Druid, I guess we're just not there yet. I still don't think we're there yet for pirates. What do you think?
I say the same thing I said about the Murloc we talked about earlier. If I want to play a pirate deck, this will probably go in it, and it'll be fun. But there's not a pirate deck that I'm really that interested in playing right now, and I haven't seen enough pirates that make me interested in playing this right now.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's a super good fit in Aggro Warrior, where Aggro Warrior already has Nazoth's First Mate and runs Bloodsail Raider and stuff like that.
Right, just find a spot there, yeah.
Yeah, it's a free 1/1 with charge on turn 1, and it thins your deck, which, I mean, there are decks that, like, that was what made Mysterious Challenger really good. Wasn't that it was a 6-6 for 6, it was that it thinned your deck a ton and cleaned up your draws and helped you curve out. So in that respect, I think he's going to be really powerful. He's only going to be playable in the pirate classes, right? Like, you need a Nazoth's First Mate or a Buccaneer or a Swashburglar or something to pull him. And if you don't pull him on like turn 1 or 2, then you feel kind of silly. But it's just a free 1/1 at some point early in the game in an aggro deck that has charge. Like, that's pretty good.
Charge.
I think he's definitely going into early game aggro decks. It's unfortunate that there's maybe not more classes that can take advantage of that. Like, it would be super good in Paladin or Hunter or some of the classes that try to push a lot of damage. And instead, it basically, like, it may as well have been a warrior only legendary at this point.
Right. It's a fine card, though. Overall, it's a great card. Not great. It's a fine card. It'll probably slide into most of those existing pirate decks, meaning that one pirate deck meaning that one pirate deck we see 2 weeks out of the year.
And since it has charge, it could potentially find its way into something, since charge by itself is a very powerful mechanic.
It's true.
Yeah, I mean, in Rogue, if you were able to throw down something and have that guy pop out and you can also slap down a couple of cold bloods on it, like, it could be part of a gimmicky win condition at right. some point.
It's true. It's a much cheaper Leroy.
South Sea Deckhand.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. We got more to move on. We're going to talk about the Grammy Goons this week.
Now who's got the upper hand?
Yeah. So we got Grimy Goons. So this tri-class card is, remind me, Hunter, Warrior, and
Paladin.
So Hunter, Warrior, Paladin cards. We're going to talk about the three that have been revealed so far. People in chat have been asking, what about the class-specific cards? We will get to them, just not this week. We're gonna basically try to get as many neutrals out of the way as possible so we can focus on class cards in the coming weeks. So first, we're going to talk about the Grime Street Informant. It's a 2-mana 1/1 Battlecry. Discover a Hunter, Paladin, or Warrior card. Meh, it's fine. I mean, it's basically a... it's a variant of...
Jeweled Scarab.
Jeweled Scarab. A cheaper Jeweled Scarab.
It's literally... It's a Jeweled Scarab with no fixed cost. So, I mean, sometimes you're going to slap it down and you're going to get offered junk you don't want. And sometimes you're going to get offered, like Call of the Wild, Tyrion, and a Gorehowl. Like,
I was going to compare it to a Discover version of what's the 2-mana 1/1 that used to be a 2/1 or 1/2? A little
Novice Engineer.
Novice Engineer. That's what I was going to kind of compare it to. It's basically the same stat line as Novice Engineer, but instead of playing something from your deck at random, you're discovering a Hunter, Paladin, and Warrior card.
I mean, I think the problem with this card for me is it's quite literally a worse Jeweled Scarab. Jeweled Scarab offers you the ability to get on curve cards and control what kind of cards you're fishing for, which makes it really good in the classes that run it. It also has beast synergy for the classes where that matters. This is basically one of the Discover cards. It's like an emergency reload at the end of the game. You're going to slam this down and hope like crazy that you draw something really, really good. And unfortunately, because you have to draw one card from each class, it's not like you're going to be able to control what that card is. You don't know if it'll be a weapon, a spell, a minion. And the times where you're offered great cards will be great. The times where you're offered awful cards will be awful. And in general, it's probably going to be pretty average. Like on average, you're going to be offered something that isn't quite on curve, that maybe doesn't fit any of the synergies in your deck, right? You're not necessarily going to get a beast in Hunter. You're not necessarily going to get, the true Silver Champion you needed in Paladin. And it feels like it's weaker than Discover cards have been traditionally because of that. But it is cool because you do guarantee you get one from each class. So you're always going to see at least one option from each of those three classes. And that's new.
Yeah.
I'm cautiously optimistic about this one. I'm going to say it. Yeah. I actually like this card. JR, you were saying.
No, that you took the words out of my mouth.
Yes.
I like this card. I could see this in Hunter or Paladin. Maybe not so much Warrior. I could definitely see this in Hunter, where you're trying to get something that's going to help you down the road to get to your to help you end up getting to your Savannah High Main and your Call of the Wilds and things like that. And in Paladin right now, like anything in Paladin can help you right now, because Paladin in general has been pretty weak in the meta. But we might be seeing some of that change with this expansion, is Paladin got some pretty decent cards this go around, along with Priest. But I think, digging for like an Execute or trying to get a Gore Howl or something that is powerful that is from another class is pretty good. And I think you're going to see it played.
I mean, we've seen this in the past, right? Like, we've seen a 2-mana 1/1. The stats are awful overall, When you're
but all things considered,
right? So you're playing this for the card draw, for the incentive of adding an additional card to your deck that you hope will augment it. We were kind of, you know, Discover overall has been very strong. There are very few times when you pull a Discover minion and you get three totally unusable crap cards. It happens, but, you know, overall, it doesn't happen so often that people don't run Discover cards. So the question is, when you're now pulling one card from three different classes, does the randomness or quote unquote crappiness of the cards get better or worse? You know, do the cards get better or worse once you're offered cards from a different class completely? And I think that's something we have to wait and see. But if we wait and see and the offerings are good, obviously it'll be a great play.
It's just going to be tough because the range is going to be so wide, right? Like, as it turned out, I know we were maybe a little bit like the same position, like cautiously optimistic on Ivory Knight, right? And as it turned out, Ivory Knight was really good because the edge case where you get nothing and all of the Discover options are terrible was very, very narrow. I don't know. We'd have to do a lot of math to work it out. But I think the edge case here is there's so many anti-synergies, so many bad cards. You're playing Paladin and you get offered Shield Slam. Like, there's just too many things where it's going to be really, really weak comparatively. So it feels like it's always going to have to be a bit of a Hail Mary card to me. But
we'll see. We'll see. Well, let's go on to the next one. It's Grime Street Smuggler. It's a 3-mana, 2/4 battle cry. Give a random minion in your hand. +1/+1.
Good card. Really good card. Super good card.
Why? Tell us why.
So 2/4 for 3 is already a really, really good stat line, and people have been playing lots of 2/4 for 3 cards because they've been very powerful. Things like Imp Gang Boss or Flame Waker. And the problem with most of those cards has been, independently, they did very little. And that none of the existing 3-mana 2/4s had immediate board impact. You would play them, and then, like with Imp Gang Boss, you might get value if it had to be killed with damage. But best case scenario, you got a 1/1 token out of it. And then on the balance, right, stuff like Flame Waker, you had to leave in your hand and wait till you could synergize with it. Ditto Bran, ditto a lot of the other 3-mana 2/4s. So as a like decent-ish anti-aggro card, this is really cool because it's the first one where as soon as you play it, something good has happened, right? And you know you're going to get value from it as soon as you play it, as long as you have literally anything else in your hand. And that value is ostensibly as good or better than what you were getting from Imp Gang Boss in terms of getting a 1/1 token, right? Instead, now it's a buff on a card you haven't played in the classes where there's a bunch of stuff that does that and there's a bunch of cool potential synergies for that. So I think this one's going to see a lot of play. I think this is going to end up being a fairly core card in this tri-class set because of how consistent it's going to be. Also, I know we haven't gotten into this much with any of the other cards yet, but it's a common and going to be really good in Arena, like super duper mega good in Arena.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think the biggest, I agree with Kevin a little bit on this. It's everything that he said. I would just add the fact that the Grimy Goons in general, like, they have a lot of the synergy where you're getting plus ones with cards in your hand. And if you're playing this on curve and you have a card in your hand that is a 4-cost minion and it happens to be the only minion you have in your hand, then that 4-cost that you're playing on curve becomes even better. We were just talking about Doppelgangster a little bit ago. If Doppelgangster is in your hand, now on turn 5, you have 3/3/3s. It's one of those things where it's RNG, but it's RNG that you can potentially control. And if you're on curve and you're able to have your cards laid out just right, then this becomes really good. Because if you're playing, you know, turn 3 minion, turn 4 minion, and that turn 4 minion gets a +1/+1, then that has potential to swing the game in your favor.
I'm going to take the dissent on this one. I'm not a big fan of this one. turn three is very important for quite a few classes. So, like, I don't see it getting played in Hunter because turn three is already, you know, kind of cramped and you know what you want there. I don't see this getting played in Shaman. So,
it's not getting played in Shaman.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Hunter, Warrior. Yeah, I forgot about the Trasslane. So, Warrior, I don't think so either. And then Paladin is the last one where, I don't know, I feel like if cards with this type of stat line and this type of effect were that good, especially super good, I feel like we'd be seeing cards like Imp Master get played a lot more. Cards with the ability to grow. I mean, essentially, if Imp Master survives a turn, which oftentimes it will, it just, you know, equally or outstatted this thing, but it's totally neutral. So I don't know. I don't think that's good. It's sure you get +1/+1, but we don't see the other cards that give your minions +1/+1. We don't see those cards get played.
This is the new mechanic, right? With the in-hand stuff. And we've just looked at other cards like Doppelgangster where you can't play them without these kinds of effects. Like, I think that's where we don't know. And even if it doesn't hit that kind of minion, it's still basically just an Imp Gang boss, which is already a super good card.
Not an Imp Gang boss. I mean, an Imp Master, a 3-mana.
I know, 1/5. But it's literally an Imp Gang boss. Like, it's a 2/4 that gives you a 1/1. It's just a battle cry instead of a damage effect. Like, that's basically the same card.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. But could there be some scenarios where, you know, maybe they find a way to enhance this a little bit? But I don't think playing a 3-mana 2/4 stat line is worth getting a random +1/+1 for. I'm trying to think, especially of any of the three cards. I don't know of any of the or three classes of any of the three classes. I can't think of any where it's like, oh yeah, I would much rather have that. In Arena, sure, it's a great card. I think it's a great card in Arena. But I honestly, I'm going to take the Descent here and say that this card doesn't get played.
Reminds me a little bit, JR, of old school Shattered Sun Cleric, right? Where it was a 3/3 that gave you +1, but that was on board, not in hand. And obviously in hand is slower than on board, but I think it's going to be pretty good. Just on that comparison or the Imp Gang boss comparison alone, like those are cards that were massively valuable, wildly overrepresented in Arena. I think it sees play.
I'm going to say it doesn't. And the kind of general opinion that I've been seeing on the card review is that it doesn't see a lot of play either coming from pro players. So we'll have to see. Let's take this last one. Don Honcho. He is the legendary for the Grammy Goons. He's the lead, the head boss, head honcho, Don Honcho. He's a 7-mana, 5/6. So he's a Malkorok with a battle cry that reads, give a random minion in your hand +5/+5. I like this one better. I like this one much better.
I mean, mathematically, it's better. In theory, what you're getting is you're getting a, what is that, a 10-11 for 7? Which is insane. I think the problem will be it just hits too late. Like, if you could dial all of this back down and have this be, I don't know, sake of argument, take it back down and have it be a 3/4 minion, and you could play it on like 4 instead of 7, right? Then all of a sudden, crazy, crazy good, curves into some awesome stuff. But on turn 7, like, you're setting this up going into turn 8, where your likely plays are going to be, what, like big legendary minions? You're hoping to get
Ragnaros?
Like a 13-13 Ragnaros, a 12-12 Medivh. Like, I just don't know what you'd be hoping to hit. Or the other possibility, right, is that it ends up being kind of the weird top end in a buff based like Paladin Flood deck or something, in which case, yeah, I mean, it's going to be cool if you can make a one cost Abusive Sergeant be a 6/6, and that's going to be massively powerful and a huge swing. But I don't think those decks even run anything at a cost of 7. Like, I think this would be standing alone as the top end in a deck that otherwise curves out at like 4 or 5. It might be, and I mean, like, this could be a super scary combo with Bran while Bran is still in rotation.
Or Doppelgangster.
Yeah, and like I don't know with Bran, would the battle cry hit the same minion both times, or would it be random both times? I assume it would be random, and it wouldn't necessarily hit the same thing. So maybe you could hit two different cards in hand. Like, crazy awesome possibilities, but it feels like it's going to end up being just too high cost.
I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think in Warrior we've seen this, right? So we've seen the 7 mana 5/6. We saw Malkorak get played quite a bit, and the reason why it didn't wasn't that the stat line was too low. It's that there were so many weapons that you could get that just weren't that good, that ended up not making up for the lower stat line. This is a guaranteed 5/5. There's no RNG about it. I think if you were guaranteed a 4/2 weapon every time you played Malkorak, you'd see it get played in every single Warrior deck from now until Kingdom Come. So, I don't know. I like it. In late game, you're right. It's kind of, but I mean, Paladin definitely plays that late. They play, you know, Tyrion. They play, you know, those deeper later minions. And then they also have some pesky, less expensive minions that were just kind of empty in hand, and you're waiting to kind of dish them out and die, that now they kind of have a second new life. I like this one. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting card. I think it's an interesting card. I think it has some uses. I agree with Kevin a little bit that it's probably too expensive. It may not see play because of that, but it has potential to also be really good. The biggest thing that I see with it is I don't see it being played in a way that you're going to make an already big minion bigger.
I think you don't hope for that. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't hope for that. I think where it really shines is later in the game when, you know, you're on turn 7, your hand's a little bit depleted, and you're a warrior and you're sitting there with, like, maybe Armorsmith or something like that. You're like, I can wait a turn and play this card and make my Armorsmith a, you know, 6/9 or, you know, something like that. And then, you know, have a really awesome big Armorsmith out there that, you know, is already helping me a little bit on gaining armor, but I was also quite a bit bigger now as well. And I think that's where you're going to see it really get really shine, is when you're late in the game and you're drawing these small minions that you didn't get to play earlier. They're now no longer just fodder in your hand. They're now going to be something big.
Yeah, I mean, you could totally, like, this could take the tech slot spot from something like Baron Geddon in Control Warrior, and it lets you do kind of the same thing that Elise does right now, where you can take an early game card that was going to be useless, like an Acolyte of Pain, or right, like Cruel Taskmaster or something silly, and upconvert it. And then also, right, for exactly the same reason that I think the Smuggler is theoretically going to be good, this card has to be good if the in-hand mechanic ends up mattering. Like, there are so many of the Hunter cards where it's like, summon minions equal to attack cost, or deal damage equal to attack value, or whatever. Like, there's just enough of that stuff that this card has to, by its design, be in all of those decks. And if that ends up being a thing in, I'm thinking more likely in Paladin than in the other two, then it's going to be huge. And that would be awesome, because it's a cool card. Like, the design is fun, and the art and the, like, thematic feel is crazy. So I hope this is actually something that gets played.
I like it. If you're taking keeping score at home, make sure you put all of our reactions to all these cards, then you can send us your make fun of tweets. I love those. I retweet them all the time. And it's like, Kevin all totally got this one wrong. You know, JR totally got this one wrong. John got all of them wrong. We get it.
People who've been doing this for decades in other card games still get it wrong. It's just a fun thing to do.
Yep. It's like, if your card reviews are fun to look, to listen to and think about the possibilities.
Like a year later, especially.
But look at the track record of even pro players. And I don't know, I think we're fairly smart guys, but we're above average. We're by no means pro players. So, you know,
my favorite is going back and watching reviews of Dr. Boom. and how off base everybody was about that card.
That's true. You call that
Mysterious
one.
Challenger, same way. A lot of people were like, it's probably not going to matter. Secrets are bad.
Red. Nope. Oh, all right. Let's get out of here. I think we got to get out of here. So, man, what a show. We did it. We were calling, you know, an hour and a half show, and it definitely was an hour and a half show. So thank you guys so much for hanging out with us this week. It's always fun to do these shows and chat it up. I can't remember. When was the last time we did a show? October 30th. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, the week before BlizzCon.
Got it. So first and foremost, if you have thoughts, questions, comments on the show, send us your emails to wellmet@blizzbro.com. We do want to thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben and Coral. Thank you so much for your support of the show. If you want to support the show, you can just head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast and find out how you can get involved. Guys, I did a bad thing, and we have new patrons, and I didn't put them in the show notes, so I'm going to read them aloud now. We want to welcome Adam W, Davidson Y, Simeon S, and Theo L. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Well Met family, and we'll see you around. We've got some cool stuff planned for our patrons. Again, patreon.com/wellmetpodcast, and find all the stuff there. Also, iTunes reviews. We also have iTunes reviews, and I think we didn't have any last week, so I think we're good. This week, we do want to thank, from the USA, Shaguar 12, and then I'm going to type these to JR in Skype so he can say them. JR, you ready?
Right. I am ready. Let's do this thing.
All right, there's one.
But yeah. All right. Wow, that's an awesome name.
Yep,
by the
you're
way.
Welcome.
Sid Harta 88 from Italy. Thank you for your 5-star review. And JG Rhymes from Canada. I think that's how you pronounce that one. So thank
think
you,
that
Sid
is
Harta
as well.
88 and JG Rhymes.
Yep. Thank you guys so much for your reviews. We love reading your iTunes reviews on this show. In fact, so much that we search the world for every single iTunes review just so that we can read them on the show. So head on over to iTunes. We also get Stitcher reviews as well. So if you're like, I don't have iTunes, head over to Stitcher. You can do it there as well. And, leave us a review there. We love your 5-star reviews. And let's go ahead and close out. I'm going to do shout-outs. Kev, you're up. Kev, what's up?
I mean, nothing we haven't already said. Big thank you again to everybody for tuning in live. We had a great turnout tonight. And everybody who did the same for my TESPA casting. That meant the world to me to have lots of people in there geeking out in chat and being excited. That's such a cool feeling, you guys. You have no idea. We didn't get a chance to talk about it earlier, but I did want to make one quick mention. For those of you who are quasi-pro or thinking about it, we're expecting Mean Streets of Gadgets End to drop in early December, but HCT 2017 is actually underway right now. So if you are thinking about trying to get out there and compete, you need to get started on your HCT points this month. Ladder placements for November of 2016 do matter. So get out there, hit that up, and hopefully we'll have Mean Streets sometime in early December and be able to come back and try a bunch of cool new stuff.
Awesome. JR, what about you, man?
I just want to give a shout out to all the awesome people that I met out at BlizzCon who came up and introduced themselves and told me that they listen to the show or read BlizzPro or are fans of our other shows or things like that. You guys made my BlizzCon experience amazing. So thank you all for that. Other than that, just go check out that post that I was talking about earlier in the show over at jrcook.net. I'll send you a holiday card. I just need your address. And trust me, I'm not like selling your address or anything. It's just going to be seen by me just so I can mail the card out. And then I will delete it afterwards.
JR promises. JR promises as good as they come in my book. All right. Well, as for me, I am streaming 5 days a week over at twitch.tv/kickedtripod in the mornings and the evenings. If you want to come hang out, it's generally a good time. We're playing Hearthstone. We're playing WoW. We're playing Overwatch. Played a little Civ 6. I did a Logic Pro 10 stream earlier today where I was talking about Logic Pro and what makes our shows tick. So you can find all that stuff over at twitch.tv/kicktripod, and that's where I am at. Let's get out of here. So thanks for joining us for another episode of Well Met. Join us live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific at twitch.tv/blitzbro to get in on the conversation, and follow the show on Twitter at Well Met Podcast for additional news and updates. Well Met is exclusively supported by our fans. If you love the show, you can find out how to become a part of the family at patreon.com/WellMetPodcast. You can also find WellMet apparel at store.blizzpro.com. Special thanks to Jake Butno for our music and Scythe Designs for our graphic design. This has been episode number 85 of WellMet. We'll see you guys next week for another one. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye.
Well Met is a production of BlizzPro.com. The show records live at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. To get the latest news and information about the show, follow us on Twitter at Well Met Podcast, or join us on our subreddit at reddit.com/r/WellMetPodcast. If you would like to support the show, you can find out how at patreon.com/WellMetPodcast.
Gadget Sand, the city of opportunity.